with an honors degree in actuarial science and has been working in the general insurance consulting industry for more than 5 years. She has experience in economic and regulatory capital modeling, ORSA, reserving, and risk management in the South African, UK, and Mauritian markets. Thabo is a senior analyst in the general insurance team at Deloitte Actuarial and Insurance Solutions based in Johannesburg. He graduated from Wits University in 2017 with a degree in actuarial science and has been working in the consulting industry for more than 5 years. He has worked on various non-life IFRS 17 projects, from building to reviewing specific clients and vendor solutions. He also has experience in various economic and regulatory capital modeling, ORSA, reserving, and risk management engagements in the South African, UK, and Mauritian markets. Thank you, Corinne and Thabo.
Okay. With insurers tackling the IFRS 17 implementation, a lot more questions has arisen as to what the potential impacts on SAM may be. That, coupled with the SAM Phase 2 work that's currently being done, as well as the publication issued by the PA to provide some clarity on the completion of the IFRS items in your QRT, provides us with a good opportunity to discuss the possible impacts that IFRS 17 may have on SAM. And while the final amendments to the FSIs are still very much uncertain, we are going to consider the potential implications of aligning your IFRS metrics in your SAM calculations to that of IFRS 17. Essentially, we will be having a look at your IFRS 4 income statement and balance sheet items that are used as inputs for your SAM calculations, which no longer exist under IFRS 17. Hence, it's very important for insurers to consider how these IFRS 4 inputs in SAM will be mapped to the respective IFRS 17 line item or obtain some sort of proxy to be able to use them as a SAM input to be able to complete SAM once IFRS 17 has been implemented. We will be having a look at the IFRS 17 effects on your SAM balance sheet, IFRS 17 possible impact on your SAM own funds, and the IFRS 17 impact on your solvency capital calculations.
Okay, cool. Before we look at the potential impacts mentioned by Corinne, I just want to highlight the differences between the various disclosures under IFRS 4 and IFRS 17. So under IFRS 4, we had our net earned premium and our net claims incurred line items, where both of these had gross inflows and outflows and were netted off with your reinsurance outflows and inflows. Whereas under IFRS 17, however, we have a separation of your gross inflows and outflows and reinsurance inflows and outflows. As highlighted by your net earned premium, will be highlighted both, your net earned premium under IFRS 4 will be highlighted as insurance revenue under IFRS 17 and reinsurance expenses. And your net claims incurred line item under IFRS 4 will be captured by your insurance service expenses and your reinsurance income. Okay, and then regarding the balance sheets under both standards, if under IFRS 4 and IFRS 17, both the statement of financial income disclosure actually looks the same. However, the makeup of the various underlying items, whether we're referring to insurance liabilities or reinsurance assets, are different. So our insurance liabilities under IFRS 4 are typically a sum of our OCR, our IBR, and UPR. And our reinsurance assets under IFRS 4 are typically just the reinsurer's share of those three items I just mentioned. Regarding the statement of financial position under IFRS 17, however, your reinsurance contract assets are your assets for incurred claims and assets for remaining coverage, whereas your insurance contract liabilities is just an aggregate of your liability for incurred claims and liability for remaining coverage. Okay, cool. So we're going to just start first with the IFRS 17 impacts on your SAM balance sheet. So IFRS 17 has different concepts describing when cash flows can occur, and these are, so there's a period of obligation, which reflects the period in which an insurer has the right to receive premiums from policyholders, but has the obligation to honor any claims that may happen in that period. Coverage period, where this is defined as the period of obligation where the insurer does not have the right to unilaterally terminate or reassess the risks that are embedded in the contract. And then the contract boundary under FS 17, this is just the period in which cash flows relating to the contract can occur. So payments or receipt of premium, any of that time. So, but this doesn't really So under SAM, however, SAM defines its coverage, its contract boundary as in a similar light to your FS 17 coverage period. And it essentially your SAM contract boundary again has the same three criteria as your IFRS 17 coverage period, where namely the ability to terminate, the ability to reassess any risk embedded in the contract, and the ability to reassess any cap. So the implication that now exists, given that insurers across the board are reassessing coverage periods for IFRS 17 purposes, the facts and circumstances that existed when the SAM contract boundary was assessed may have changed up until now, right? And this is due to the fact that currently under IFRS 17, when insurers are trying to determine what their coverage period is, since IFRS 17 questions what an appropriate period should be given the current facts and circumstances that exist today. So in most cases, we find that there's an alignment of IFRS 17 coverage period and your SAM contract boundaries, and hence any changes that may exist under IFRS 17 will flow through to your SAM contract boundary. Now, for a typical non-life insurer, they typically have assumed a one-month contract boundary for SAM. And if they are any different to your contract boundary that exists under FS 17, you may decide to align these two concepts, which changes your premium provision that you will calculate during that point in time. Under SAM, your premium provision essentially is calculated as an expected present value of your future cash flows from in-force business plus any expected present value of future cash flows from business and boundary. So what that does, all those things I had mentioned previously in the previous slide regarding your contract boundary would typically just affect the blue box that's up on the screen at the moment. Just moving on to the applicability of the common premium provision simplification. So under SAM, there's a common simplification that a lot of non-life insurers apply, where they just take the combined ratio multiplied by the UPR to get what the premium provision that they should hold at any point in time. So now, this simplification may not typically exist under IFRS 17 if you were to use your LRCPAA to try to do this, because your LRCPAA may not equate to your UPR currently under IFRS 4. This is due to the fact that under IFRS 17, the LRC actually encapsulates both your DAC component, any premium provisions that may happen during the contract duration, and also ignoring the effects of DAC and premium provision, the LRC may not actually capture the whole UPR, and this is because the LRC is raised, it's using an actual cash flow that is received as a premium, and you earn that cash flow as time progresses. But rather than using under IFRS 4 when you're calculating your UPR, however, you're raising the liability based on an accrual accounting method. As gross written premium actually happens, you raise it as a liability, and you earn revenue in each and every month until that UPR goes to zero. So in this example I have in front of you, I have the example of a three-year motor warranty product with a gross written premium of $360,000, acquisition cost of $36,000, premiums are payable annually in advance. There's a uniform emergence of risk, and also acquisition costs are paid up front. Okay, so you can see our liability for remaining coverage, because we haven't received any premium in the first year, but we still are able to actually earn insurance revenue, as shown as your under your earned revenue under UPR. And it also encapsulates your acquisition costs. You can see that the closing balance in year one is 144,000, which is the summation of your debt component that's embedded in your LRC, plus the premium debts that you have at that point in time. And then in year two, you can see the debt that existed in year one was subsequently paid with that current year's premium, and you're earning revenue in that month as well. And your closing balance again here now is just the debt component that's embedded. And then in year three, amortization cost of your amortization of acquisition costs happen. You earn revenue, you receive the premium that you earned, and hence your closing balance after year three is zero. So both under IFRS 4 and IFRS 17, the closing balance under year three is zero, but the mechanics that actually flow through in each of the calculations are different. And hence, it would be inappropriate to try use the LRC for some insurers as a proxy for your UPR.
Another area of IFRS 17 where you may see an impact on your SAM calculations is your deferred tax asset or deferred tax liability. Currently, your SAM deferred tax asset or liability is equal to your IFRS deferred tax asset or liability plus any adjustments made from IFRS to SAM. As highlighted before, as a result of possible changes in your technical provisions, there may be a change in the adjustments made from IFRS to SAM. For example, if under IFRS 4 you held best estimate reserves, and now under IFRS 17 you actually hold 75th percentile reserves. So the adjustment made from IFRS to SAM on your reserves will differ, and this change will flow through to your deferred tax asset or liability. We have assumed for the purposes of this presentation that your IFRS deferred tax asset or liability will remain the same, but there may actually be circumstances once the tax rules are finalized that your IFRS deferred tax asset or liability may also change. Next, we will be having a look at the possible impact on your SAM owned funds. So based on the items that we just discussed on your SAM balance sheet, we thought it would be best to demonstrate this with the use of an example of how your own funds may actually change when using IFRS 17. So say, for example, currently, when using your IFRS 4 IFRS values, your basic or your own funds is currently 300 million. As a result of maybe a different contract boundary that you adopt now, or simplifications that are no longer available, there may be movements in your technical provisions. As a result of changes from IFRS to SAM, there may be changes in your deferred tax asset and liability. And to the extent that your SCR is used to determine your risk margin, and we will discuss those changes shortly, your risk margin may also end up changing. And that may cause you to have very different own funds once implementing IFRS 17 than what you currently have under IFRS 4. Your tiering of own funds is likely also to be impacted, as your tiering is a function of your SCR, and any movements in the SCR will result in a change in the tiering of your own funds to the extent that Tier 2 and Tier 3 funds bites. This is of particular concern for insurers who are startup insurers and who are still trying to build some scale and may sit with a very big deferred tax asset on their SAM balance sheet as a result of the losses while trying to build some scale. This deferred tax asset is often kept as a function of the SCR as a result of being a Tier 3 asset. And these insurers are probably more at risk of adverse movements in the SCR, as these can influence the tiering of your own funds and may change your own funds eligible to meet the SCR significantly.
Okay, cool. So we're just going to look at your IFRS 17 impacts on your SAM capital requirements. So the first one would be any earning methodology impacts on revenue. So IFRS 4 earning methodology typically is defined by your accounting policy at any point in time. And for non-life insurers, this is typically uniform. But even if an insurer now, under IFRS 17, they they're eligible to use the PAA, they still have to perform an emergence of risk assessment to confirm whether or not they can still use the uniform earning pattern that they used under IFRS 4 previously. And if an insurer has to use the GMM method to calculate LRC rather, then the coverage units under GMM may result in a different emergence of risk than that was contained by your accounting policy. Cool. So over here, I just have a quick example showing a three-year engineering product where your earned premium or insurance revenue is using a uniform and versus an increasing emergence of risk assumption. So you can see in year one, the revenue you actually earned in year one under the increasing emergence of risk is lower than using in a situation where you have a uniform emergence of risk. And in year two, your increasing emergence of risk is slightly higher than your uniform one. And in year three, it's significantly higher than your uniform emergence of risk assumptions. So that is a potential impact that may exist, and hence something to look at. And then the other point is the treatment of onerous contract implications on revenue. So under IFRS 4, when calculating an ARR, you had the ability to capture the movements either in earned premium or in net claims incurred. But under IFRS 17, however, any movements that are going to be captured by the any movements in your loss component rather are going to have to be captured in your insurance service expense line item. The other implications on revenue. So other items that may influence solvency if the FSI amended such that revenue is used as a proxy for earned premiums is that for insurers with inwards reinsurance, contingent versus non-contingent premiums, reinstatement premiums that are mandatory before were treated as an earned premium, but rather now these reinstatement premiums that are mandatory will actually flow through as a negative claim in your insurance service expense line item rather than contribute to revenue for inwards reinsurance. And then the last one is any financing components that may be embedded within a contract. So IFRS 17 defines a significant financing component as a period greater than 12 months where receipt of a cash flow, the receipt of a cash flow and the earning of said cash flow is greater than 12 months. That's how IFRS 17 defines a significant financing component. So if this currently exists for any of the insurers, this will have an impact on the earned premium, or rather the insurance revenue that's calculated, as your insurance revenue will also encapsulate any interest that was accreted at that point in time. Okay, cool. And then regarding earning pattern changes we just discussed and the treatment of onerous contracts we just discussed, so the last three items we don't believe are going to be significant for non-life insurers, as a lot of the business that non-life insurers have is typically annually or less, and hence there's no significant financing components that may exist, and also the treatment of onerous contracts, that effects of may not be that significant. But we do, however, believe that if an insurer has a inwards reinsurance inwards reinsurance products, that the movement of mandatory reinstatement premiums from earned revenue to be considered as a negative claims rather than revenue will be significant.
Okay, another possible example of how IFRS 17 may change your SAM inputs is the reclassification of insurance and reinsurance contracts. So under IFRS 4, some contracts may have been classified as an insurance contract or a reinsurance contract, and hence you would have seen the revenue come through in your written premium or your earned premiums. And vice versa, some contracts may not have been classified as an insurance or reinsurance contract, and hence you wouldn't have seen that revenue coming through in your written premium or earned premiums. However, as a result of the explicit definition of insurance and reinsurance contracts under IFRS 17, some of these contracts may need to be reclassified as an insurance contract and need to go into your insurance revenue on your income statement. Or some of these contracts may need to be unbundled and rather valued under something like IFRS 15, like your service components. The question is now, what will the impact of this be on your SAM calculations? And should it impact your SAM calculations? We decided to demonstrate this with the use of an example of how this can actually happen. So say you have an insurer who sells hospital cover to a policyholder. The policyholder pays 1,000 rand a month to have this hospital plan cover, and the policyholder gets access to the hospital network to be able to provide them some hospital benefits. The insurer on the back end pays 800 rand a month per policyholder fee to that network of hospitals, such that the hospitals will actually provide the cover to them. If we go back to the slide that we showed at the beginning on the income statement, typically under IFRS 4, this income would have been included in your other income line as it wouldn't have formed part as an insurance contract. Whereas now, because it meets the definition of an insurance contract, it will flow through in your insurance revenue under IFRS 4. And if you used your net earned premiums under IFRS as a SAM input, this may have big implications if you now use insurance revenue as a proxy for your SAM inputs.
Okay, cool. We're just going to look at the SCR impacts for a non-life insurer. So following through the effects that we previously discussed for technical provisions, because there's a change in your reinsurance and gross technical provisions, it may result in a change in your interest rate risk charge that you calculate, and because there are possible changes in your reinsurance technical provisions, this will also follow through to your type 1 credit risk that exists. And then if the insurer holds any foreign technical provisions, any of those changes that we previously discussed will flow as a change to your currency risk. As well as, so under for concentration risk, there's two interpretations that an insurer can use to calculate the concentration threshold. One is using total assets, and this is an example I'm going to go through. It affects that example. So because your IFRS total assets are, well, because your SAM total assets are a function of your IFRS total assets, any changes that happen on your IFRS total assets will flow through to your SAM total assets, and hence that will change your concentration risk threshold and hence change the concentration risk charge that will make it calculated under IFRS 17.
On the non-life underwriting risk side, if we have a look at what the potential implications of the changes in earned premium and revenue that Thabo mentioned may have, as earned premium was a direct input in your premium volumes under SAM, this may change your premium risk, and any changes in your claims provisions may flow through to your reserve risk as well. And then to the extent that the insurer used profit made on UPR to calculate lapse risk, your lapse risk might be changing if you need to find a new way now to estimate that profit used within your IFRS 4 UPR estimate. And then any possible changes in earned premium will flow through to your catastrophe risk charge, where earned premiums are used as an exposure measure. Okay, the other possible area where we may see some implications of IFRS 17 will be on your loss-absorbing capacity of deferred taxes adjustment on the SCR. So on the screen here, you can see the formula that's typically used to calculate your LAC-DT. And the first place where you may see a change from IFRS 17 flowing through is on the economic SAM balance sheet deferred tax asset, which we described on the balance sheet item. The second one will be on your deferred tax asset raised on post-SCR shock, such that any changes flowing through on the SCR may flow through to this one as well, resulting in a change in your LAC-DT. And the third one being the three-year profit, the tax that you pay on the three-year profit. And to demonstrate this one, we decided to show it with an example. So say you have an engineering product, which spans over 5 years with a 600 Rand gross written premium. Under IFRS 4, you probably would have assumed a uniform distribution of risk, and your earned premium in each year would have been 120 for each of those years. Under IFRS 17, you may decide to rather use an increasing risk exposure, such that your earned premium, or that your premium in the first year recognized is 60, in the second year 90, third year 120, 150, and then 180. And if you assume the same claims experience across IFRS 4 and IFRS 17, you will see that your profit per year under IFRS 4 and IFRS 17 actually differs. So under IFRS 4, in year 3, you may have ended up with a profit of 225, whereas under 17, you end up with a profit of 135, just because of how revenue is recognized. So across the five-year time period, your total profit made is the same, but across the different years, you get different profits. And because SAM places a cap on the number of years of profits that you need to use for your LAC-DT, using your 3 years' profit will have an impact on your LAC-DT calculation. Okay, we have highlighted here potential implications of replacing your IFRS metrics within your SAM calculation to that of IFRS 17, as well as reasonable proxies that you can use, such as replacing your earned premiums with insurance revenue, and what unintended consequences you may experience as a result of these changes and proxies that you use. The true effect of what IFRS 17 will have on SAM is still very much uncertain, but it's very important for insurers to start considering from a SAM perspective already how your full SAM calculations will look like from a mapping perspective, and see what possible capital implications there may have been if some of your simplifications is no longer applicable. This will ensure that insurers will be able to explain any differences that arise in their SAM calculations as a result of moving from 4 to 17.
Thank you. We'll take any questions.
We don't want any questions.
Thanks, Tabo. Thanks, Corinne. We have one question online that we can perhaps start with, and it says, the points around IFRS 17 reporting requiring gross and reinsurance balances to be separated is true, but so did IFRS 4. And then they've mentioned that that the PA had already clarified that the inputs into the SCR should be treated as their prior definitions. So is the industry perhaps making a mountain out of a molehill?
So maybe I'll tackle the first part of the question, and then Karina, I'll give you the second part. So so I'm not too sure as to what disclosure that person was referring to. But if I'm thinking they were referring to it on an income statement perspective, typically your line items was gross earned premium, then there'll be like reinsurance cash flows, and then it'll be a net. So those things were actually combined when you're looking at it at a line for line item. Whereas under IFRS 17, however, now your insurance revenue is literally just from revenue that you receive from policyholders, and then you separate any reinsurance inflows and outflows separately in net reinsurance expenses. So, yeah, unless they were referring to something else, yeah, I don't know what else further to add.
Okay, second part. So, yes, the PA did issue a notification to provide some clarity around how to complete your IFRS items in your QRT. While it does provide some high-level guidance as to how to treat it, and so there may be some changes coming through still which need to be considered, and our presentation today was trying to just show you what the possible implications may be. It may be that none of them will impact it, but some of the possible implications may need to be considered.
Yeah, just maybe to further to add, if that individual wants to clarify the questions further, you can email myself or Kareem. You can provide an illustrative example if it helps. Any other questions?
There's another question online. I don't know if it's the same person or not, but it says, by reconsidering SAM contract boundaries, are we saying we got it wrong initially?
No. So the facts, like I mentioned there, the facts and circumstances that you that existed at the point of SAM implementation may be different to the facts and circumstances that exist currently under IFRS 17. And because like there's a lot of questions that IFRS 17 actually asks, it may result in a difference in your coverage, your coverage period being different to your SAM contract boundary. So it could potentially, I don't think you insurers got it wrong initially, but because of those questions that were asked currently, that I think that's what may cause a difference between the coverage period and your SAM contract boundary.
Yeah, just to add to that, I think your SAM contract boundary for most insurers has been set like 8 years ago. And people were looking at a specific thing then and specific items when setting your contract boundary. But with all the investigations and everything that's been going on with IFRS 17, people are looking through a new lens now and may understand some things a bit better on how to treat some of those, which may just improve how you treat your contract boundary from the SAM version.
So I need to ask this for my own sanity, no? We are not expected to change anything in the QRT next quarter or next year or whatever to accommodate IFRS 17.
Can you just repeat the last part?
So we are not expected to change anything in the way we do the QRT to accommodate IFRS 17. So the PA is not making any changes to SAM as of now.
No. We are just presenting possible things that we will see. And yeah, until the PA issues final notification, everything's good.
Yeah, and if those items that you relied on under IFRS 4 don't exist, well, you don't have sight of under IFRS 17, we just wanted you to start thinking about the proxies and how those proxies will have an impact on your solvency capital requirements.
Just a very technical question on on one of your slides. You mentioned about the mandatory reinstatement premiums.
Yep.
So I'm guessing you're talking from the point of view of the reinsurer. That's only really affects the reinsurer.
Yeah.
So I'm curious now. I mean, I've never worked from a reinsurer perspective, but are you saying that they wouldn't have considered that mandatory reinstatement premium within that calculation from the get-go, but now because it could be seen as a negative claim, they could?
Yeah, exactly. So that mandatory reinstatement premium previously was just considered as premium.
So it's irrelevant.
Yeah, and now because it's contingent on claims, it flows through to your insurance service expense line item as a negative claim.
Yeah, so it was just not, it was recognized almost in your earned premium section, which would have flown through to your SAM calculation. So that's why we're mentioning it may have an impact now that it's not there anymore.
Are there any further questions for Karina or Tabo? Okay.
Thanks so much.
There's one there.
Oh, I think there was one there. So we'll just do a quick question.